Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
All right, welcome back. This is episode number 410. 410, holy cow. This week in the news, just to get started, I do want to mention I posted over the weekend on the WCY podcast page, blog, that it is with great excitement that I introduce some changes to how donations to the show are handled. Now, you all know, or if this is your first time listening to the program, that this show is produced via donations to the program, and it was for the first couple years of the program, actually, that I funded everything out of pocket. But we grew so fast that it became necessary to open it up for donations to keep a lot of the things going and to increase quality and content size. It just became a necessity. So the blog post that I wrote says, in the beginning, folks would donate a dollar here, $2 there, and every time I would send a card, personally written, and send it back to them. Did the cost of the card and postage make me break even? Sometimes, but it was the thought that counts. It was the right thing to do. After a while, folks started asking for a PayPal subscription to be able to donate on a monthly model. So we introduced this, and over the past 4 years, it's gone great. Now keep in mind, we've been doing this show for, gosh, since July of 2011. And when somebody donates or signs up for a subscription, we talk about every week, there's a contributor $2 per month, a fellow $5 per month, and a producer level for $10 a month. So those three tiers really make the show possible, right? And these subscribers who gave back all got personalized cards in the mail with their names on the website for their continued gifts, which made it possible to continue to evolve and bring quality Masonic education to you guys week after week, month after month. And it's been over 9 years now. So it's incredible, and I have to thank everybody from the bottom of my heart for doing this. Behind it all, we still had folks who just bought our producer pins, and those we would send for a one-time gift of $10. But you know what never really sat well with me was that our monthly producers, those people who gave $10 every month, never got a pin. It was just kind of an oversight, and I never really thought about it. But starting today, they will. So if you are listening and you're a current producer level, a benefactor for this show, I should have all of your addresses, and I'll be sending that to you in the mail. So that's if you are a producer level benefactor. I'll send you the pin, and you'll be getting that very shortly. But also, over the last year, people have really been asking me to start a Patreon as well. So maybe they don't like PayPal, or they don't like subscription models, or whatever the case may be. Maybe they just really love Patreon, which is cool. And so I thought long and hard about it, and today, well, a couple days ago, I'm announcing that the same tiers and benefits that currently exist with our PayPal monthly benefactors will also be available on Patreon. So you asked for it, and it's happening. The PayPal subscription donations aren't going anywhere. If you currently donate to us this way, it won't change. In fact, you get a bonus. I'm sending you a producer's pin if you're a producer. So, really awesome. But in a nutshell, you'll be able to give via PayPal subscription or Patreon. Both have the same tier structures, but with a plus, the producers will now receive a pin. This is to say thank you to all of our loyal producers over the years. A PayPal subscription donation will be as follows. So the $2 contributor gets your name on the website. The $5 fellow gets you a personalized thank you card in the mail and your name on the website. And a $10 producer gets the producer's pin, the thank you card in the mail, and the name on the website. Patreon exactly mirrors this. What's the difference? There isn't one. Why do it? Because you guys asked for it. So thank you all. I really appreciate everybody who donates to the program. It really does mean a lot. So to all the current producers, keep an eye out in the mail. To the other contributors, I want to say this. If you're a $2 or a $5, if you decide to quote-unquote move up to the producer level, I'll send you guys a thank you card as well and a pin. So anybody who goes from 2 to the 10 or 5 to the 10, obviously honor that, and we'll send you another card and a pin to go with it. And you guys are the best. So thank you for making WCY Podcast your choice for Masonic education and for allowing me the privilege of coming back week after week. So that's the big news. You can go to patreon.com/WCY Podcast, or you can go to our website and click the links and follow them through there. Also, whether you want to go through PayPal subscription model or you want to use Patreon, whichever you'd like. But thank you very, very much. This week we have two great papers, as well as a segment of the Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison, so we'll drop that right in the middle of the episode as usual. And, one more piece of news. The only chartered lodge in the United States that I am a member of currently is Ezekiel Bates Lodge out of Attleboro, Massachusetts. So I get the travel magazine from the Grand Lodge of Massachusetts. Cover story, MasonicCon. 3 or 4 pages in, scroll over to the right-hand side, and there's a picture of Jason Richards from the Masonic Roundtable and myself at the table there representing TMR. It was just really cool to see us in the magazine, and more importantly, that MasonicCon got this great full-page front cover. It was awesome. Speaking of MasonicCon, we announced our first speaker, which is going to be Timothy Hogan. Check out the MasonicConChicago.com website to learn all the details. We've listed some of the speakers and their videos that are up there. Actually, just one. Another will be coming out on Tuesday, and then the Tuesday after that, we'll go ahead and put that out on social media as well. You'll see a list of vendors. We now have 3 vendors, which are confirmed. We have Masonic Revival, Upon the Point, and 2 Pillars Apparel. And we've got some great sponsors as well, coming from RDBI Data Solutions, of course, WCY Media, Space Novum Lodge, and our friends at Amity. Travel safely. So MasonicConChicago.com will get you there, and you can check out all of the details. It's a year away, September 18th, 19th, and 20th, 2020, and we're working hard on pulling it all together. It's going to take a year to plan, but check it out. Be in the know by going to the website and filling out the little subscribe for announcements, which is on the main page. And we have a nice little map there that shows where everybody who has told me they're coming is coming from already. It's pretty rad. All right. Enough of all that. Let's get into this week's first paper, which is a really interesting one. It's called Leadership is Expected and Respected. Leadership is expected and respected. One of the most irritating and disconcerting things during any Masonic meeting is when 2 or more brethren on the sidelines get into a loud-voiced discussion. It's even worse when one of them is hard of hearing. When this happens during degree work, it can throw off even the best of ritualists. We've all seen it and heard it. It happens. It is a distraction from the solemnity of the ritual. It's discourteous to the degree team. It's robbing the candidate of the benefit of what should be a meaningful experience. And it's insulting to the brethren who are trying to hear. Unfortunately, the offensive brethren don't seem to realize that they're disturbing their colleagues. They don't realize that they can be heard, or possibly they don't care. How to overcome situations like this is a leadership problem which faces many masters. Should he rap the gavel and ask for quiet? Should he have someone go over to the offending brethren and ask them to be quiet? Should he ask them to leave the lodge room? Or should he ignore them? The answers to these questions will depend on many factors. The mantle of leadership comes in many guises. The personality of the master will, to a large degree, dictate the manner in which he can best cope with the situation. There are some with strong authoritative images who can maintain order merely by a meaningful glance, while others must resort to persuasion, reasoning, or other methods. We recognize that the worshipful master has the authority to take strong action. His word is law. However, in the interest of peace and harmony, he will, if he is a good leader, use only the force necessary to overcome an infraction. Gentle persuasion is probably the best tool he has, by whispering wise words of counsel in the ear of an erring brother, or having it done will usually secure the desired results. We heard of one grandmaster who was speaking at a lodge in his own jurisdiction, which had a reputation of sideline chatter. Even as he was speaking, the lodge secretary and the lodge treasurer became involved in a heated whispered argument which proved most distracting. In fact, it became so disconcerting that the grandmaster lost his train of thought. Wrapping the gavel, he addressed the talkative brothers and sternly told them that he had been invited to speak, that he intended to speak, but that he was not going to have any competition. Upon resuming his prepared remarks, you could have heard a pin drop. It was so quiet. In fact, the remainder of the evening, the lodge maintained a subtle attitude. Everything was quite proper. As he left the temple, he said to himself that that was probably the last time he would be invited to that lodge. How wrong he was. He later learned that at the next meeting of the lodge, the secretary apologized to the master and to the lodge for the embarrassment that they had caused, and moved that the Grand Master be elected an honorary member of the lodge. The treasurer seconded the motion, which was unanimously carried. He is the only past Grand Master holding an honorary membership in that lodge. In recounting that story, the Grand Master, now past Grand Master, uses it to illustrate several valid points of leadership. 1. Leaders must lead. 2. When you are in the right, you have nothing to fear. 3. Leadership is expected and respected. 4. Harmony must prevail. Courtesy, common courtesy, is a trait of mankind. It is a two-way street. It is the hallmark of Masonry. We frequently see masters who try too hard to be a good old boy. They joke too much, and in doing so, invite a great deal of sideline chatter. Their meetings become so informal that the lodge is subjected to ridicule. Their lack of leadership is counterproductive. Instead of creating an atmosphere of dignity and decorum, they produce a comedy of contagious errors, which reflect upon the character of the lodge and frequently drives the brethren away from the lodge in droves. Even worse, however, is the silver-tongued master who is a born ritualist. His intonations, expression, and sincerity are superb when he delivers the ritual, but as soon as the lodge is closed, he becomes a loud-mouthed, foul-mouthed, woman-chasing rogue. He completely ignores his own beautiful rendition of the charge to put into practice outside the lodge those principles which are inculcated therein. This Frankenstein monster has the leadership potential of a mule. Everyone in leadership positions in any field of endeavor either consciously or subconsciously develops a style of leadership techniques which fit their personality. What is effective for one might be an absolute flop for another. Some of the leadership techniques could easily be described as gimmicks. On the night of his installation, one master announced that he was assigning a specific task to each of the 200 members of the lodge, which he would like to have completed within 3 months. What he had done involved a great deal of planning, which is an essential in leadership. Over a period of months, he had developed a list of things which needed to be done around the lodge. He charged one member to see that each task was accomplished. No one job involved much time or effort, but it did involve everyone. Taking down a piece of upholstery on the junior warden station, scrubbing the lavatory, painting the stair rail, repairing strings on aprons, cleaning the glass on the past master's pictures, replacing a frayed cord on the secretary's desk lamp, oiling the hinges on the preparation room door, replacing a tile in the kitchen floor, having the window curtain dry cleaned, helping the secretary address envelopes, preparing a telephone roster, refinishing the stewards and deacons' rods, developing a roster of widows, and the list went on and on. Each task was matched with a member's name, one who had the time and ability to do it. To coordinate and supervise the execution of the assignments, the master assigned his officers. This, too, is an important element of leadership. In the following weeks, the lodge building was a hubbub of activity as the members gathered to carry out their respective responsibilities. Some came during the lunch hour, others in the afternoon, and some in the evening. Fellowship reigned as one brother helped the other. Wives frequently came along to help out and often brought along refreshments. Even after a job had been finished, many came back to see what else was being done. A coffee klatch developed. Cribbage and pinochle games often started after the work was done. The exciting thing that happened, though, was a dramatic increase of attendance at even the stated meetings. And at these, the master was careful to exercise another trait of leadership by recognizing the accomplishments of each member and showing appreciation. Not only did the lodge building sparkle with its improvements, the members had become Masons in the true sense of the word, with a genuine concern for one another. Just as the spin-offs of the space program have produced many improvements in our daily lives, the spin-offs of the master's leadership have had a lasting effect upon the lodge and upon the community. A master is expected to show leadership. He did, and his leadership is respected. However, his brand of leadership might not fit another. The first impression many visiting brethren get of a lodge is the reception by the tiler. How meticulous is he in checking your dues card? having you sign the register, seeing if you can be vouched for, or if you need the dreaded committee. Providing an apron or in taking up the word can either turn you on or turn you off. His is a thankless yet important job, yet it is somehow often ignored. One Tyler in a small town lodge was getting more than his share of harassment from one of the lodge members one night. Finally, after about 5 minutes of constant harassment, the Tyler became fed up. Picking up the quote-unquote implement of his office, he said, "My job is to keep off cowards and eavesdroppers. I wish to hell it was to keep off horses' asses." It was crude, yet it was forceful. It accomplished its purpose. It was a form of leadership. Much has been said and written about Masonic leadership. Much has been said and written about Masonic leadership. See the Short Talk bulletins listed therein. We show our leadership by the way we act toward others. It's as simple as setting the example by the way we conduct ourselves on the sidelines, or as complicated as controlling the discussions on an emotion-packed motion. Each of us has some leadership potential or ability. It's a trait worth developing and practicing. Just as a pair of pants won't fit everyone, we must tailor our leadership abilities to fit our own personalities. Now, during that paper, I alluded to a list of Short Talk bulletins for you to check out. Now, I'll list those in the actual paper, which will be able to be downloaded via the show app on the Podcast Source application. So once you download Podcast Source, then you search Whence Came You, and you can download our app, and it's kind of within an app within an app, and you have access to all of the bonus features. Let's go ahead and get into this week's Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison.
There are, they say, two types of motorcyclists: those who have been down and those who are going down. In the same vein, there are two types of Freemasons: those who have been disappointed by a brother and those who will be disappointed by a brother. It happens. We're not perfect. We're human. Those aren't exactly earth-shaking revelations, are they? When the anti-Masonic party courted him as a presidential candidate, most worshipful brother Henry Clay acknowledged the imperfections of the craft. He said, "It does not practically affect all that it theoretically promises." However, he added, "but it must not be said that I concur in the denunciation of Masonry. I would not denounce and formally renounce it to be made President of the United States." Still, when we feel a brother does not live up to Freemasonry standards, we're surprised and hurt. When it happens, it's best to think it through in light of those theoretical promises Brother Clay mentioned. A ray of hope is there in such situations, in that within the fraternity, we are always dealing with the issue on a higher level. That is, the brother whom we perceive to have wronged us has knelt at an altar, his hands on his volume of sacred law, and sworn before God Almighty that he will not cheat, wrong, or defraud another brother. There is also another side of the coin. It bears asking, does that brother think I have disappointed him? Am I doing everything I can to subdue my passions and improve myself in Freemasonry? And remember, that other brother should be asking the same. There are no easy answers and never will be. But we should have a leg up on solving our differences, because we are, in fact, brothers. As far as that motorcycle goes, I happen to be a biker who has been down. I have the crushed leg to prove it. In my own particular case, I upgraded my ride to a Harley trike. That third wheel helps keep me a bit more stable. It would be great to have a third wheel to help steady our Masonic relationships too. wouldn't it? Come to think of it, we do. We call it an obligation. What, my brothers, come you here to do? For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
Now comes the point in the show where I ask you to help support this show. How do we do that? Well, we have a bunch of different ways to do that today. If you head on over to WCYpodcast.com, you can click on direct donation through PayPal, which we briefly touched on in the beginning of the program. Of course, you can make that one-time donation, or you can sign up to be a monthly contributor. Contributing $2 a month, $5, or even $10 a month, whatever you choose, really helps the program out. Of course, we have a limited edition shop where you can pick up any number of items that come direct from us. Help us out by going to MasonicRevival.com, but also we have some other affiliates that are really important. Banker's Best, one of the most unique things we've ever done, is to work with Brother Levi Banker out of St. Louis, who owns his own company called Banker's Best Beard and Skin Care. He's been so generous. If you head to WCYpodcast.com, click on More, then click on Banker's Best, and you can check out a bunch of the different products he's got. He's got a whole line of beard care products, skin care, oils, balms, all of this stuff, and he has been doing it a long time. He knows a lot about it. Everything is handmade, quality items. We even came up with the King Solomon's Reserve Beard Balm, which is a few years old now, but remains one of the great products that he still offers. Even the artwork on the bottle was done by a brother. The nice thing about this particular product is 50% of the proceeds come back to the program. If you're a history guy like me, then you'll be pleased to know that what makes the beard oil and balm very special is that it was made utilizing the fragrances specific to the exports of King Solomon's time and location, which is amazing. So black fig and honey is the formula. Luxurious scent, as Levi says, truly fit for our first Grand Master. If you use the promo code BBWCY357 at checkout, you'll also get a little bit of a percentage off. Please check that out. Banker's Best, or just head on over to buybankersbest.com. We also have a code with On It. You can go to our website, click on More, then go to On It, and you can click through any of the links here, or just go to onit.com and use the promo code WCY at checkout. You'll get 10% off, and they'll send a little bit back to the program to help us out. And of course, it's business time. The book that I wrote with John T. Ruart, it is making some real waves, and people are using it and seeing success. So check that out on Amazon. You can click right to it. You can get it on Audible, Kindle, or in print, even on iBooks. And last but not least, I want to ask you to check out the Great Books program. You'll see the banner for it on the left-hand side, Intellectual Linear Progression. Use the promo code WCY, or you can just click on that link there, and you'll actually go right to the website and hear a little bit from Scott Hambrick about how awesome the program is. So that's it. I hope you guys enjoy, and thank you so much for helping us out. So this next piece is called Ashlar's Rough Smooth Story of a Stone by J. Fairburn Smith. And where the last paper that we read really focused on administrative and leadership concepts, this one's a little different. So in this one, we go a little bit more holistic. We are pleased to present this paper prepared by the eminent Masonic scholar J. Fairburn Smith, editor emeritus of the Detroit Masonic World. Raised as a Lewis at the age of 18 in the Lodge at Hawick, Scotland in 1925, Brother Smith has become one of the most respected of Masonic journalists. He is a molded stone from the quarry of Masonic life. An eminent sculptor was once asked, "How do you carve such beautiful statues?" He replies, "It is the simplest thing in the world. I take a hammer and chisel, and from a massive shapeless rock, I knock off all the stone I do not want. And there is the statue. It was there all the time." End quote. In every Masonic lodge room, there is, or should be, the rough ashlar and the perfect ashlar. These two and the trestle board constitute our movable jewels. What is their significance? What do they have to do with masonry? In our monitorial work, we are taught that the rough ashlar, quote, is a stone as taken from the quarry in its rude and unnatural state, end quote. And the perfect ashlar is, quote, a stone made ready by the hands of the workmen to be adjusted by the working tools of the fellow craft, end quote. The rough ashlar was not a stone that was merely picked up somewhere. It was a stone that has been selected. Some work was done upon it. It was apparently a good stone. It was a stone that showed good prospects of being capable of being made into a perfect ashlar. If it had not been a good stone, it would never have been cut out from the quarry. So it is with our prospective member. He cannot be merely picked up somewhere. He must be selected. Before he is ready to be initiated, some work must be done upon him. He must stand certain basic tenets. He must be apparently of good material. He must be a man who shows good prospects of being capable of being made into a good mason. If he had not been a good man, he should never have been proposed for membership. In changing a rough ashlar into a perfect ashlar, the workman takes away and never adds to. He chips and chips. He cuts away the rough edges. He removes the visible flaws. He does not create, by chemical means or otherwise, a new material. He takes that which is already there and develops it into the perfect ashlar. The stone from which the Venus de Milo was carved by an unknown sculptor of ancient times lay since the beginning of time in the rocks of the island of Milo. A common, unknown workman may have cut a huge piece of marble from the quarry, but it took a master artisan to carve out the beautiful statue. It took a good piece of marble and a skilled artist to produce the Venus de Milo. Not many operators in masonry can make a perfect ashlar, so there are not many perfect masons in our lodges. In our ritualistic and other work, we can take away much of the roughness, remove the sharp points, and obliterate the visible defects. We can produce as good a mason as there is within our power to produce, but the essential thing is to have a good material upon which to work. This statement is applicable to all mankind, but to us as symbolic masons, it is pregnant with meaning. For was not each one, at the commencement of his Masonic career, placed in the northeast corner as an example stone, in the hopes that the stone so placed would, in the fullness of time, be wrought into a thing of beauty, acceptable to the builder? What does the poet say of the stone? Isn't it strange that princes and kings, and clowns that caper in sawdust rings, and common folks like you and me are builders for eternity? Each is given a kit of tools, a shapeless mass, and a book of rules, and each must make, ere life is flown, a stumbling block or a stepping stone. These are very true words. The kit of tools are those talents with which God has blessed us to enable us to fulfill our mission in life. We are told in the volume of Sacred Law that one man received 5 talents, another 2, and yet another only 1 talent, so that our duty is for each to discharge his allotted task to the best of his ability and to help those who have not been so well blessed as himself. Thus, each will be assisted in carving out the quote-unquote grand design of being happy and communicating happiness and thereby of being more extensively serviceable to his fellow creatures. The shapeless mass is a man's character, and each one of us is his own architect, builder, and material. And like our predecessors, the operative masons, we each must show our craftsmanship in working out a perfect ashlar fit to be tried by the square of his own conscience. The Book of Rules in the volume of Sacred Law, quote, that great light that will guide us to all truth, direct our steps in the path of happiness, and thus point out the whole duty of man, end quote. Let us pause for a moment and earnestly ask ourselves, which are we making, stumbling block or a stepping stone? If a man's life is such that he cannot, quote, join in the grand design of being happy and communicating happiness to others, end quote, then he is a stumbling block, not only to himself, but to all those with whom he is associated. If that man is a Freemason, he should study the ritual and discover the inner meaning so that he can learn to perfect his stone. Let us trace whence comes this perfect stone. An ancient charge provides that a mold stone shall be given to a visiting operative mason to enable him to demonstrate his craftsmanship. The stones were selected, individual stones, from the quarries to suit the requirement of the building material. As speculative masons, we obtain our mold stones from the quarries of life. Thus, when we receive an application for admission into our lodge, it is our duty to carefully scrutinize all the credentials of the applicant from every angle, so that only approved material is admitted to the craft. Freemasonry can and does improve good material, but it cannot make bad material good. As with the operative mason, poor material would have endangered the material sculpture. So with us, as speculative masons, the faulty ashlar will endanger the spiritual temple we are endeavoring to build. Having found by the strictest inquiry that the applicant or moldstone is suitable, we have, by those inquiries, knocked off some of the irregularities which surrounded him, and after his initiation, he is represented as the rough ashlar. That is, the stone is no longer the mold stone, but it is approximately a cube which still requires a considerable amount of dressing before the perfect ashlar, which is within it, can be brought to light. And the candidate is given him to knock off rough knobs and evanescence of his character. Later on, he finds that although the common gavel and chisel are suitable for reducing the roughness, they are not capable of achieving perfection. As a craftsman, he receives another set of working tools, one of which is essential to perfection, namely the square. And here he learns that it is only by continual grinding and many applications of the square that the stone can be brought to a true die or cube. In his capacity as a craftsman and as a man of the world, he is continually coming into contact with his fellows, and he learns to control his passions and to recognize the rights of others, with the result that the stone he is working upon, namely his character, is gradually taking shape as a perfect ashlar. Later, he is called upon to hand his stone over to the builder, who cuts a beveled hole at the top, so that the stone can be attached to a lewis and be hoisted up, ready to be placed on the base assigned to it by the builder. Thus, he is reminded that the rope, the lewis, and the crane represent the all-sustaining power of God, and that if he has discharged his duty faithfully and in accordance with the precepts laid down in the volume of sacred law, he may rest assured that when his final summons comes, he will find that the great builder will have prepared a place for him in that great spiritual temple not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Finally, let us consider this perfect ashlar from the geometric point of view. Looking at the perfect ashlar, as it stands in the lodge, we notice that it has six equal and exactly similar sides, and that no matter how it is placed down on the level, it must stand on one of its faces and present a similar face to the observer from any point of view. It is the only geometrical body which requires no support from its fellows, but when placed in line with similar cubes, demands its own space and lines up with the others on top, bottom, and sides. All right, that's the end of that piece. Now, it was so interesting to note that this is a similar concept that we're seeing. Of course, the paper written in 1925, but we're seeing an element there in a concern for just letting any old person into the craft. Now, just a few years later, we start to see the massive increase. And so it's almost as if these people foresaw an issue happening. And of course, we all know what happened, and that is that the floodgates of masonry did open up to everyone and anyone with a pulse. Take that how you would like. What do you think? Are the floodgates of masonry open? If so, have you or your lodge done anything to make it harder to join? Should we make it harder to join? I guess that depends on our mission in masonry. Do we want more members, or are we looking to not care at all about membership numbers and let happen what happens and focus on Freemasonry as a craft that assists us in becoming better men and just let happen whatever is to happen? It's a really interesting concept to think about the many angles that the paper touches on, holistically, of course. But anyway, I want to say thank you again to everybody out there who is supporting the show. If you're a producer of the program, please keep an eye out for your mailbox. I hope the address I have on file for you is correct. If I receive anything back in the mail, then I will be reaching out to confirm If you like a Masonic podcast, then check out the Masonic Roundtable, which goes live every Thursday night at 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern. Brother John Ruark and myself will be presenting at Lodge of the Nine Sisters in Raleigh, North Carolina, on the 21st of September. We'll be doing a couple of esoteric presentations that I hope you will all enjoy. I hope to see many of you out there. I think John and I are planning to bring a few business time books as well. We're going to be practicing a little bit of that balance, right? We're going to talk about esoterics and also leadership. We have a lot of great leadership concepts contained within the book that we put together. So, with all that, I want to remind you to check out the MidnightFreemasons.org, and that's it. So, until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.